Big man, thanks very much for doing this.
Okay, pleasure.
Obviously, we got to see the Scottish Cup earlier. That must bring back some great memories. Not just of the day, but also Martin Boyle's ears. Wee Boyle,
he's a character.
He knows I love him. He knows I love him.
He's brilliant. I think it's something that you will never, ever be tired of, talking about. It's one of them days. It's a bit of history, more so for the players and for the fans. It was a brilliant day for them. For me, it was just the reward for them for all the hard work that they put in during the season.
Uh-huh. We'll talk about that later. We'll go right back to the start with you. Grew up in Liverpool, obviously. What was like that? What was your football upbringing like there?
On the streets, throw your coat down, a couple of goalposts, getting chased by neighbours to another one's house or another one's wall, moving along until we'd find a place where we could play. The same, bit different now.
Uh-huh. You didn't see it anymore, did you?
No.
And did you always want to be a centre half? This is what I want to ask.
Nobody
wants to be a defender.
Believe it or not, when I started playing, I was under nines from that age. I was a striker.
Yeah.
I was a striker. I was only small, and I was leading. I don't know how, but I was leading goal scorer on a few occasions. Then suddenly, from 11, went to left wing, and then as the years went by, I was at Everton, went into midfield, centre midfield. And it was a little bit like default, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I went to Bolton, and I think I had a real growth spurt when I was 13, 14, and there was someone injured at Bolton at the time. And Phil Neal asked me to play centre-back. And from then on, probably didn't look back, really.
Uh-huh. Was Phil Neal a centre-half himself?
Right back.
Right back, okay. Right so back. Did he maybe seen something in you? Huh?
He must have seen something. I don't know what. Uh-huh. He must have seen something.
What kind of player were you? Because you see all these players now going for 50 million that can pass it out for the back.
In terms of value? Uh-huh. Oh, I don't know about that. I think when I left Bolton to come to Celtic, I think that was the record sign at the time, which was in 1996, which was 4.5 million, which was probably 4.4 over the odds. I think obviously valuations have gone through the roof now. You look at some of the transfer fees that players are going for, and it is crazy, but you know what? Good luck to them. Uh-huh. I'm not one minute envious or anything about them. Good luck to them. I had my time. I was very lucky. I managed to play for some fantastic clubs, and you move on.
So, see, when you were coming through the youth, were you encouraged to try and play for the back?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I was, yeah. That was the good thing at Bolton. I had a coach there, Steve Carroll. And he would always encourage me to keep playing. And Phil Neal was the one who gave me opportunity, but Bruce Rioch was fantastic with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was amazing in terms of, making mistakes. Not a problem, just learn from them. Mm-hmm. And he gave me so much encouragement and confidence to keep playing as a ball playing centre half, which I'm not too sure, some other players would have got that encouragement.
Because I think when you left Bolton, there was was it Liverpool and Arsenal that were interested as well?
When Celtic had agreed the fee, I was on the way up to Glasgow, and Bruce was at Arsenal at the time, and we'd agreed personal terms, and the transfer fee was not going to be a problem. And on the way up, Bruce's agents were my agents at the time, and they'd asked me to pull over and wait. And then we couldn't have waited any more because it was disrespectful to Celtic at the time, and we got to from about 20 minutes outside Glasgow, and Bruce rang us up and said, listen, I'm having a few problems at Arsenal here. Sign for Celtic. Otherwise, there was a possibility that I was going to go to Arsenal.
So how did the move to Celtic come about?
Initially, I think the season before, me and Jason were going to Blackburn in a joint deal for $9 million.
You were the brains of that operation.
I was definitely the brains of that operation. So we'd agreed a fee for $9 million, but it was one of them deals that Blackburn had said, we are the only, if we pay $9 million, we are the only team that can speak to them. So that was all agreed personal terms, and it looked like it was going through. And then the next minute, Jason got a phone call from his agent, or to his agent, to say, and it was from Bolton, to say that they'd agreed a fee with Liverpool for $4.5 million.
Were you asking if you were part of the deal?
No, well, he was allowed to go and speak to them. And Jason was like, oh, I don't want to leave you. You know, if I go, it means you're going back. I said, listen, it's not a problem. I said, if it was me with Everton, I'd be doing the same. I'd be going to see you. So, you know, that happened. And so that meant the deal was off. So we went back to Bolton.
And then heard from Celtic after
then
that.
Then Celtic was after that then.
Did you know much about Celtic when you heard their interest?
I knew a bit about them, not as much as probably, obviously, as teams in England. But once I got there, you know, spoke to Tommy Burns, who was amazing. Mm-hmm. He was brilliant.
Best guy ever, isn't he?
He was such a gentleman, he was like a father figure to a lot of the players at the time. And, you know, how can anyone not be sold on Celtic Park when you turn up and see him?
He's so passionate about the club, isn't he?
Yeah, he was fantastic.
You played with the three amigos at Celtic. Mm. Who was the best at the three?
Oh, I think in terms of general ability, I would have to say Paolo. But Andreas Thom was a fantastic player.
Was he?
He had the biggest thighs you've ever seen in your life. I don't know what he was taking in them at the time, but they were enormous. Just oozed class. Effortless. Everything he did it with ease. He was a... You know, he glided around the football pitch. He was a great, great player. You know, and Kadetti was just a goal scorer. Mm-hmm. You know, never trained from Monday to Friday.
Did he know that?
It was George's treatment table. So he used to always be on the treatment table getting a massage. And then suddenly a Friday, George would train and score on a Saturday.
Uh-huh. Were you surprised with the standard of the player when you came up here?
I was. Uh-huh. You know, and probably I shouldn't have, you know, but I think when you're a club the size of Celtic and obviously Rangers, they can attract the big players from Europe. And you know, when I was there, obviously I had Van Hooijdonk there at the time and all, and you know, fantastic goal scorers, and we just made up basically that quality. You know, you look at George, Van Hooijdonk, you know, Andreas Thom, De Canio, and then you look at Larsson, you know. We were lucky.
You and you're the man that had to mark them and train every day, was it?
Easy.
Back pocket, son.
Yeah. Well, no, it's different training. Uh-huh. You know, I think it takes a certain type of player to play under that pressure. You know, you've seen good players come to big clubs and not handle the expectation. The ones I've just named. You know, they handle their expectation. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, we had some players who come to Celtic and it just didn't really happen for them, but they were still really good players. Mm-hmm. You know, but some, because they don't do it on a Saturday and it doesn't happen for them there, you know, they get labelled poor players, but it's probably a bit harsh on some of them now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Decano there. He was my manager at Swindon.
Yeah.
Craziest guy ever been there.
Yeah.
Was he crazy back then?
Yeah.
What sort of stuff?
When he first came, he couldn't speak a lot of English. It was very limited. Mm-hmm. So the Granty had the task of looking after him. So, which I don't know whether that helped or hindered really. But no, to be fair, Granty was great for him. So he'd look after him away from the training ground and help him with the bills and as well as the clubs and stuff like that. But Paolo was. He was a larger-than-life character, as you'll know, being at Swindon with him. But he would always come out the shower and he'd be in front of the mirror, and it was basically Paolo's mirror. You know, you could never get him out of
George's bed, Paolo's mirror.
And he'd always be in front of the mirror, and as his English started to get better, he'd go, my mother, she give birth to a beautiful baby, and he was like this all the time, you know. And that was Paolo. And, you know, he was great. Uh-huh. And then obviously he picked up the language really quickly, and he was a fantastic character.
Uh-huh. He's a clever guy as well, isn't he?
He's, you know, he's, he loved his character. He loved his karaoke. he you know, it was, I think it was all new to him, but he loved it. God, I had the karaoke machine in his house, and sometimes we'd all go back and Paolo, as you can imagine, singing. He'd want centre stage. But a great
what, was he, what was his song? You remember now?
Not really.
Just anything?
He loved it because he was a showman, wasn't he?
Centre of attention.
You know, he loved the attention. But fantastic trainer.
Uh-huh.
Probably the best foreign trainer I've worked with.
Just for working hard.
In terms of attitude. Uh-huh. You know, he was immense.
Uh-huh.
An example to any young player.
See, with the players, was Tommy the perfect manager with the way he wanted the team to play?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was, you know, Tommy, because Tommy was an expressive player, he would like to show his qualities on the pitch, and, you know, and that way I think it helped with the egos, because when you've got like a Paolo, it comes with an ego, mm-hmm. but in a good way. You know, George Cadet, the same. Strikers all have egos. They all think they're the best. They all want the most attention because they're the match winners.
Mm-hmm.
Andreas Tom, different, was a bit quieter, but the same, wanted treated different to other players. And Tommy had the perfect attitude for that and personality, because he could give them all what they wanted. He can give them the time that some wanted. He knows he could give him 20 minutes, he could give him 10 minutes, he can give him an hour if he needed it. Tommy would do whatever they needed.
Would Tommy
to get them ready.
Would he join in training?
Yeah, he still had, you know, his quality. Obviously, you know, as you go on, you don't lose your brain. You just lose your ability to do it at the same quality or the same pace.
Tells a bit about
your brain still tells you what to do, mm-hmm. but you just can't carry it out as quickly and as good at times. But Tommy was, you know, you could see that he'd been a proper player.
So that year, why do you think he's never won the league? Just a good Rangers?
Yeah, in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes you'd have to hold your hands up, and to be honest, at that time, it was a good Rangers and all. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the players that they had in their team and what was coming. You know, your Laudrups, your Gascoignes, your Goffs. You know, they had a proper team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in the years after that, your George Alberts. Mm-hmm. You know, Arthur Newman, you know, good team.
See, that year, did you feel that you could beat them at the league, or did you think they've got it?
I think there was always a feeling, because of the quality that we had, that we could beat them and compete with them. But we always knew that in the back of our minds is that, you know, Rangers would have probably had the edge in terms of overall quality,
mm-hmm.
you know, being honest.
Uh-huh. And when they got 9 in a row, was it a real low point? Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was. We obviously, coming from England, and obviously probably the foreign lads and all, they didn't probably initially appreciate how big the 9 in a row was and equaling it. But they soon become aware of it can't be 10. You know, I think that was emphasised really, really quickly. And the fact that we stopped that. I think it was against the odds. I don't think it was expected, but it was a brilliant season. Actually, mm-hmm. we had a fantastic dressing room in terms of team spirit. Mm-hmm. That was our biggest strength that season. The fact that we had a brilliant dressing room. We'd go out together. We'd socialise together. The bond between the players was brilliant.
Was it you that brought that in? Somebody told me that you said you had to go out more and do stuff together.
I think it wasn't necessarily just me. I think there was a conversation of, you know, quite a few players where we thought, you know, we need to get to know each other more. You know, we need to try and build what we've got on the pitch, off the pitch and all, and become more together. We'd always go out every Tuesday afternoon after training. We'd go to Il Pavoni in the town.
Nice.
We'd go to the Italian restaurant. We'd always have a table there. And it was compulsory that everybody had to go. And if you wanted to leave after the food, and if you didn't want to partake in the events after that, the social side, then you were more than welcome to go. Mm-hmm. But what we found is that initially we'd all go for the food, and then you would start to see people start to drift away. And then after about a few more weeks, you'd start to see the people not drifting away and start to see them staying, mm-hmm. and started to enjoy it more and more. And then, you know, it was a big part in his mm-hmm. in his winning Little League that year.
Who else would have been big characters in that team?
Craig Bailey was a big character. Tommy Johnson, another one. But even the foreign lads, you look, you know, Mark Reaper was another big personality. Henrik and Pierre were, you know, I don't know if it was Henrik there that year, I'm not too sure whether it was the following year he came. Pierre was another big personality. Reggie was another one and all. You know, Reggie used to love probably the social side more too than much. Anybody. But no, it was great fun. Mm-hmm. But it just gives you the chance to get to know the personalities of the rest of the lads away from the football side, because sometimes you can see, you see a different side. You see, sometimes you can see a very serious side of someone on a training pitch, or a very relaxed, down-to-earth guy on the training ground, and suddenly you get them in their comfort zone, away from it. You see a different personality, and you know it was good to be able to see that.
When Rangers won 9 in a row, did you expect Tommy to get the sack?
We probably thought there was obviously going to be pressure. You know, when you lose the league, there's always, unfortunately, someone that has to carry the can, rightly or wrongly. And, you know, it was unfortunate that, you know, Tommy had lost his job. And the big thing with Tommy was that he loved the club so much. And sometimes you wonder if he had an opportunity to go back and do it again, whether he was probably too close to it all, and you could see that he really wanted it, like we all did. But sometimes you can want it too much. If it doesn't sound crazy, you know, you can want something too much that it can cloud your judgment sometimes. But it doesn't take away the fact that, you know, Tommy was I don't judge people whether they're a brilliant footballer or whether it was any. I judge them as people, and he was a brilliant person.
Did he also help your wife settle as well, Tommy?
He did. Tommy's wife was amazing.
Rosemary,
with my wife, yeah. It just reminded me. I was trying to think of a name there as I was.
Saved your big man. That's what I'm here for.
You know, that was a great little prompt there then. And Rosie was fantastic with Mandy. You know, she used to take her out shopping, used to take her for coffee, because it was very difficult in the early days for Mandy to settle. She'd had a couple of miscarriages at the time. So that probably prompted her to think, I want to go back down south. And at the time, actually Aston Villa had agreed they'd put an offering for me. Just after my first year, it was. Not many people know. And Fergus McCann, because Fergus was very much of a broadsheets man, he was working on figures. He wanted $6.5 million for me at the time. And I think Aston Villa, they got to, I think, $6 million they offered. Personal terms were all agreed, everything. And Fergus was like, the real businessman, wants $6.5 million, well, that's it, he's not going. And in the end, the Villa couldn't go to the $6.5 million. Mm-hmm. When I look back now, I'm happy they didn't, because I loved every minute after that. Mm-hmm. You know, at Celtic.
So Tommy left and Wim Jansen comes in.
Yeah.
What were the thoughts amongst the boys when the foreign manager came in?
We didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, whether it was the fans, whether the players, probably the media and all. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit as if like someone's been plucked out of obscurity and brought in, and this is your new manager. And we were like, okay. And he was very different, Vim. He was, didn't used to say much, would never hardly interfere with training. You know, it was him and Murdo, and Murdo was probably great for him. But it wasn't long in becoming that how much we all got on with him, great. He was a very relaxed, quiet guy coming in at half time. And we were like, sometimes like, we're not used to this. We're used to someone coming in going, you're this and you're that. You need to pull your finger out, you know, right off, you know, people getting dragged up against the wall and arguments. And Vim was this very calm individual. Right, guys, we need to play with more discipline in the team and we need to pass the ball better. We have to make better decisions. And then we were like looking and thinking, what's going on here? You know, our decision making in the final third has to be better. If you improve on that, then you will win the game. And we were like, okay, all right. And then before you knew it, everything he was starting to want to implement in the game was right. He was a very, very thoughtful and tactical type of guy. And I don't know why or how it worked. Mm-hmm. It worked.
Did you prefer that, to getting shouted at? Or?
It's the first time I'd ever encountered mm-hmm. that type of management. And so for me, it was a little bit like, it was a bit surreal where you go, I don't know whether this is right or wrong, but for some reason, it feels right. You know, and there was one time where, I can say it now because we finished. We were on the training pitch and we'd been out on the Wednesday and we were training on the Thursday. And we'd obviously been out a bit later than what we probably should have been.
The Tuesday went into the Wednesday, huh?
So we'd come in on the Thursday to train and there was a few of the boys, what you'd probably say, still intoxicated. So we've gone to training and we've got ready and we're out and you can see some of the boys and they were like, they were gassed. You know, and the staggering and to be fair, it was actually the Wednesday, we were training on the Wednesday. So Vim's looking around and we started the warm up and everything and there was a few of the boys falling over, you know, in training from the warm up. And Vim's like, he's gone, stop. This is not the way it is supposed to be. I think it is best that we cancel training and some of you boys maybe go home and sleep. And I will see you tomorrow.
Not even school we mind like, or anything then.
Probably a good idea that. So we've got off and then home and then come in the following day. Brand new. One on a Saturday.
So just forgotten about it, huh?
Forgotten about.
Brilliant, eh?
Forgotten about. I love him.
So that season, bad start. First two league games lost. What were your thoughts?
Not an ideal way to start the season, especially when you're trying to stop. You know, Rangers doing 10 in a row. It wasn't ideal, but we knew we just had to try and get a victory and get us going. And the one thing that we were conscious of is that we couldn't give Rangers too many more points because we knew it was going to be difficult to catch them up. You know, six is bad enough. Anything more than that, you know, it's a mountain to climb.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the guy you mentioned before, Larson, gave the ball away to Chick Charnley on his debut. They scored. Yeah. What were you thinking then? Who's this guy? Who's this character?
Well, to be honest, I couldn't say anything because I think I got sent off on my debut and all for Aberdeen. So I was thinking, I know how you feel, Nick, it's okay. But I think he, looking back now, he probably made up for it, didn't he, that day?
Just about.
Some of his goals. I know, I was certainly glad that, you know, we had him in our team. Because
Could you see his quality straight away?
You could see him in training. You know, he was, I don't think when he first started, Henrik, he was quite a shy guy. He was quite quiet in terms of his personality. And I think that's what helped bring out his personality because, you know, he was played in Holland for a bit. You know, Swedish, Scandinavians have always got a great attitude. But it was probably the Dutch part of him where we were thinking, ooh, don't know what to make here. And then once he started to come out and started to get to know the lads and you could see him just open up, he was a completely different character. And that was the best thing that happened for him. And obviously what he went on to do was phenomenal.
So would he be part of the El Pavón Tuesdays?
He would, yeah. Uh-huh. He would.
And that probably helped, yeah. Justin.
Well, it was like him, you'd still have Reggie there. I think Pierre was possibly still there and all then. So that was the Dutch clan. But we were that way. We wouldn't try and have little cliques. We'd all mingle in. You know, Tommy would be right in between probably Reggie and Henrik. Jacko and all, you know, was their big personality. And Butler was one of them. We would just say to them, if they were trying to be a little bit cliquey, he'd tell them in no uncertain terms, you know.
One of the most crucial goals of that season was the big man's goal against Rangers. What was that feeling like to score in that game?
I don't know. Everyone always mentions it to me about, you know, how crucial, how pivotal that goal was. I think it's hard to say. I'll take the plaudits for it, you know. But I think it's, you know, we were obviously at Celtic Park, and I think, you know, it was so late on that we come off and we draw the game, but it felt like a win. You know, it felt like we'd won the game. I think there was a lot of relief, and it gave us a lot of confidence, you know, going forwards. Was that the defining moment? I think there was a few defining moments in that season. I think it was one of, if probably the best way to describe it.
That year, obviously, you stopped 10 in a row. Mm. What a feeling must have been.
Amazing. I think there was a lot of talk that season because we for some reason, we come up with this thing called Smell the Glove. And everybody wanted to know what this Smell the Glove was. And it meant nothing. But everybody got obsessed by it. Because we'd all go like, we'd all mention it sometimes after in the press conferences, like, you know, we've got this thing, Smell the Glove. And everybody was intrigued by it. And we just kept it going all year. And we'd have these like big gloves type of thing, doing all that. And at the end of the season, you know, the biggest reason why we stopped 10 in a row was obviously you need to get results, but it was the team spirit. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, you can't underestimate how important the team spirit is amongst, you need obviously the quality, but we had that. But there was a togetherness and a bond with them players that we felt as if we could go on to into any game and win anything, because there's nothing better when you're playing and you know you've got someone behind you, mm-hmm. who's right there. You know, you make a mistake, someone's there. An incident happens, you've got 6-7 of your teammates there to back you up. There's no better feeling. And we had that.
The last game going into it, obviously both of you could have won it. How nerve-wracking was it?
It was squeaky bum time. You know, I think it was, we knew there was a lot of pressure on us. You know, it was...
Do you think Vim's relaxed attitude kind of
helped? Yeah, I think it definitely. You know, there was a times of the season where Rangers would be ahead, and then we pegged them back, and then it was like that all the way to the end, and then we managed to, you know, come out on top at the end. Amazing, mm-hmm. You know, the celebrations after it. I think the biggest thing was it was relief, you know, at the end. It was one of them where you were mentally drained, because you can imagine the expectation and the pressure on the players going out. It wasn't a record that we wanted, you know, the team that didn't stop 10 in a row. You know, we felt as if it was something that we couldn't have lived with. And luckily enough for us, we managed to stop Rangers from doing it.
Would that have been one of your biggest achievements in your career?
I think in terms of what it meant to the fans, you know, because people, if you would ask people in England what about that, they wouldn't have had a clue. But it was so enormous, you know, in Scotland to the Celtic fans. It was as if they didn't want that stigma of, you know, Rangers beating that 10 in a row, 9 in a row, sorry, to become that team. And we just, it was relief. It was relief. It wasn't, I've got to say, it wasn't nice at times playing that season because of the pressure. But at the end of it, the satisfaction was enormous.
A couple of glasses of red wine would have helped that pressure. And
I've got to say, it's probably one of the best nights I've ever had.
Afterwards. Straight into the town.
I had a group, I had all my mates up for it, so we were out and we were...
Days?
Oh, for days, yeah. I don't think I bought a drink. After that, you know, my mates, we were on the on the tables in bars and everything, and it was as if we'd just been given the keys to the city.
Just on the Celtic Rangers games, for people that don't know them, how good are they?
Well, if anyone doesn't know about them, you don't know what you're missing. They're that good.
Better than like Liverpool, Merseyside derbies.
Yeah, they are. For me as a kid growing up, the Merseyside derby was everything, and in terms of me playing in one, it's probably one of the best feelings I've had. But in terms of atmosphere, it doesn't come close to an Old Firm derby. You know, when you walk out onto that pitch and the hairs in the back of your neck are standing up, you know, you're looking around thinking, oh my God. You know, I remember my first Old Firm game, I was at Ibrox, and I was walking out and I'm thinking, yeah, just a, you know, it's just a derby, you know what these derby. And I'm walking out, and not in a nice way, but you know, I was getting spat at and everything, and I'm going, oh my God. I soon realised what a derby was all about. You know, it was in the warm-up. I was actually afraid at times to go over to get the ball in the warm-up because what was going to happen. That's part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to embrace that. And I loved them. I absolutely loved them. You know, probably fair share of wins compared to losses, which is probably not a bad thing in terms of some of the records. But that they are probably one of the pinnacles of playing football. I must admit to be able to sit here and said I've played in an Old Firm derby. It takes some beating.
Mm-hmm. See, were you a guy that got nervous before games?
Not necessarily, no.
But for that one?
Butterflies. Uh-huh. Butterflies.
It's a week leading up. People that we've interviewed before have said
it feels like such a long build up. Obviously it's a week, but it feels more. You can feel it even in the previous week start to bubble. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I'd always like my own time before the game. I'd go and sit in the shower or sit on one of the skips, read the programme. I wouldn't get changed till, 2:10. You know, and mine was like a slow process then of getting ready. I didn't like to be ready too early because I just felt it was just a build-up of tension and nerves, and you'd get, you know, before you know it, you know, like when you've played, you can sometimes be beat before you go out. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel drained because of the nerves. So I used to just, you know, have a little bit of me time in the, wherever I could, find a quiet area or a corner and just try and chill.
So, 98, 99, Wim Jansen was leaving.
Yeah.
What was the feeling amongst the boys when they heard the news?
We were disappointed. You know, I must admit, there was a lot of unrest at the time with Wim leaving. I think it was around Jock being there, actually. And for whatever reason, I don't know what it was, whether it was because of Wim's contract or not, whether that was the defining episode of why he left, or whether it was something going on behind the scenes, we don't know. But the one thing I would say about Wim, though, was that he was a very, very strong individual, strong-minded individual, and once he'd made his mind up, that was it. And, you know, we were gutted that he left, to be honest, because it's like one of the things, we don't know why it worked, but it worked. And we felt as if we'd gained momentum, but lost momentum and all because of it. And, you know, that was obviously another manager coming in there, and we all loved him in a way. You know, we really connected with his style of management, and for me it was a mistake.
Uh-huh. Did he chat to the boys before he left? Or was it just,
uh-huh. Same.
Uh-huh. Confused.
One tone voice again.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. This is a sad day, and you know, but we loved him. Uh-huh. We were gutted.